the case of United States against Schreckengast.
May it please the court. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Robert Simpkins. I'm the Assistant United States Attorney who handled the Schreckengast case before Judge Gilbert. The government is arguing that Judge Gilbert misinterpreted the guidelines and sentenced Mr. Schreckengast under 2B1.1 when he should have been sentenced under 2B5.1. The facts in this case are not...
But Mr. Simpkins, you're making an argument that this was just paper that Mr. Schreckengast was using. But of course it wasn't just paper, and the reason was apparent in the way that so many of these cashiers, with whom I'm most impressed, I have to say, with the alertness of the cashiers down in Carbondale, they caught it precisely because these watermarks were there and the other markings in the bills. And so it was a disguised Federal Reserve note. Only one kind of paper has Abraham Lincoln watermarked and the little strip that says 5 in it. So my problem with your argument is not whether it makes any sense, because in many ways it makes a lot of sense, but I have to tell you, this would not be the first time I've seen the guidelines themselves not make sense, and there's a place where they can be fixed, which isn't here.
I don't argue with the fact that sometimes the guidelines do not make sense, but I think that in this case, the government is making a common sense argument.
But why do the words "in its entirety" fit this situation when all they've done is remove the ink, put new ink on, left the old watermark, done it for, you know, a reason? I mean, you're claiming somehow that putting extra ink on in a different way when it's not the whole bill is an alteration, and somehow this isn't an alteration, but it's really just how much ink goes on and off.
Well, the argument that the government makes is that Mr. Schreckengast did not alter. What he did was he took a $5 bill and
I know that that's the vocabulary you're using, but just to get away from conclusory terms, you are arguing that the set of operations he performed on the $5 bill ought to be characterized as brand new counterfeiting as opposed to alteration. That's the question we're trying to look at.
That's correct.
Perhaps I could ask the question in a different way. In your view, I'm going to ask the same question of defense counsel, does anything turn on the fact that this was once a $5 bill? The alternative possibility is, suppose somebody hijacks a truck with no paper on its way to the Bureau of Printing and Engraving, and then uses that bona fide notepaper, which never had anything printed on it at the Bureau of Printing and Engraving, and makes a counterfeit on that. Is there any difference between this case and that case, as you see it?
No, I don't think there's a difference, and the reason is that before the inked engraving is placed on the paper that only the Treasury can obtain, what Mr. Schreckengast did was revert that $5 bill back to
we're
paper.
Aware of what happened. I'm asking whether there is a legal difference between that behavior and my hijacking case in terms of the language of the guidelines. This can presumably be answered by reference to the language of the guidelines.
I would think they would know my
why.
Because of the fact that he has destroyed a $5 bill. When he destroys the $5 bill.
That is a factual difference between
yes.
what happened here and my hypothetical. You can't say the reason why there is no difference is because, and you then describe the factual difference. That's not an intelligible answer to my question.
Does the paper on those trucks already have, you know, like is there one bundle that's got Abraham Lincoln watermarks and another bundle that has Benjamin Franklin watermarks and so on and strips.
Yeah, is that correct? I'm assuming that the watermark and the thread are put in at the paper manufacturer rather than the Bureau of Printing.
I don't know
is that. Correct?
I don't know that, and that was never brought out. I do know that $1 bills do not have a strip and do not have a watermark. The $5 bill did have
So if the watermark and the strip are added after it gets to the Bureau of Printing and Engraving, it sounds like that might mm-hmm. create a distinction
yes.
between the hijacking and the
that might be.
The Schreckengast situation.
One more question.
Yes,
which I will also ask of both sides. Anybody argue to in the district court what the meaning of the word instrument is? You seem to be spending a lot of time here talking about wholly made or in its entirety and so on. But one possibility, one thing that comes to mind and we need to explore, is that the $5 bill is an instrument when it leaves the Bureau of Printing and Engraving. When it's bleached, it ceases to be an instrument because it's no longer legal tender for anything. And then, right, the fact that the paper, the substrate is there, substrate's not an instrument. On that reading, what we need to know is whether the alteration was one that, at least at some stage, made it not an instrument.
The alteration, yes.
Was this discussed?
The argument was made that when the ink was removed, it was destroyed, it was no longer a $5 bill, and in that sense, it is no longer a currency or an obligation of the United States of America. You refer to it as instrument.
The guideline doesn't use currency. It doesn't use, right. The word in the guideline is instrument. You need to know what guideline means by instrument. Now, the assumption underlying the way I phrased the question was that it would be the same thing as Federal Reserve note, but maybe it's not. What does the word instrument mean?
In that context, we did not argue that or discuss it in front of Judge Gilbert. The government's argument is simply a common sense argument. When you take a $5 bill or a dollar bill and you completely destroy it and you get back to plain paper, and then you take computer equipment and you place the images of a $100 bill both front and back, the only logical reading of 2B5.1, that commentary note, is that you have counterfeited in its entirety. And that is the government's argument. The government further argues that even if he was altering, the fact that he had the counterfeit-making equipment should have still have given him the enhancement under 2B5.1.
But how do you get to that if you're not starting out with 2B5.1? Do you jump into 2B5.1 midstream? I mean, I can understand if you're right at the first point, then you're into 2B5.1, but I thought your opponent's argument was you don't even get there if it's a 2B1.1.
Well, my opponent admitted that he was guilty of what he was charged with.
Oh, sure, we all know.
Counterfeit, and,
right,
and
we know that.
It's the government's argument.
This is about the sentence, and the sentencing guidelines are maybe too elaborate for their own good sometimes, but it's what we're trying to deal
understand.
With.
In short, the government's argument is it's completely illogical to sentence someone who uses plain copy paper to create $100 bills to a higher sentence than someone who...
It might be, but then you go to the sentencing commission and get the guidelines
changed. Let me ask my instrument question in one other way. The Federal Reserve will redeem damaged notes. Suppose Schreckengast had bleached the $5 note.
As so often happens, he left it in his pants pocket.
Yeah, and he's gone through the washing machine cycle
and
been bleached. And instead of perhaps repenting of his desire to counterfeit, he had taken this bleached piece of paper to the Federal Reserve and said, "This is a damaged $5 note. please give me a new one. Would they have given him a new one?
I anticipated the question, and I asked the Secret Service to ask Treasury, and I would, to be honest with the court, Treasury's response was that if you accidentally bleach out these fives and you can show up with the $5 bill with the strip and the watermark, yes, we will replace
them. Okay. Well, but that implies that it was, even in the bleach state, an instrument.
That is, I disagree with that. That just implies that Treasury knows that you have enough there to prove
A legal obligation of the United States. They'll give you real money. Okay.
But you can't spend it at a store.
Mm-hmm.
I'm out of
okay.
time.
Thank you, Mr. Simpkins. Ms. Day.
May it please the court. Obviously, I believe that the lower court properly decided this case when you read the guideline sections 2B1.1 and 2B5.1.
Counsel, would you please sit at counsel table?
In particular, 2B5.1 application note 3, which talks about the currency being made in its entirety, and I have considered both of the points that Judge Easterbrook raised regarding the hijacking and the instrument. I think in the hijacking circumstance, it probably does make a difference whether that the security strip and the watermark are imprinted on those documents before they reach the Federal Reserve. But I think that
Do we know when they are applied?
No, but I would say, and I think that Judge Wood pointed this out, if the $1 bills are being printed without them, then this must be occurring at the reserve, and if all the money is being
transferred. No. It doesn't mean they order separate pieces of paper.
Yeah, they could have different bundles in the truck.
It doesn't seem very likely that the paper could be formulated and then the security thread inserted. One might be able to apply a watermark later, but I don't see how you could install the security thread after the paper is run off in flat sheets.
And I would agree with that, because otherwise I think perhaps it would bleach out. And it doesn't do that when you go through this process of
which takes you to the government's point. You know, if we really read in its entirety, literally, then people would have to start with the rag or the the raw material for the
actually,
paper.
Actually, they probably have to start with some carbon atoms and some calcium atoms and start making wood, right? They couldn't count on trees because the trees make the wood.
Absolutely, taken to its. Logical beginning, I guess. But I think that you
back to alchemy.
Right.
You do have to find a starting point for this, and I do think that we have a situation here where this bill can never be more than a $5 bill. It can never be traded for more than a $5 bill unless somebody is not paying attention. And as you noted, in this case, it was obvious to one of the checkers at Steak and Shake, to one of the checkers at Office Max, and one took it without question, and another one took it with question, compared the serial numbers, and then took the bill to the police, who were already questioning Mr. Schreckengoss. So you've got at least a 55% non-acceptance rate, or possibly a 75%, depending on how you interpret that third person. But
it's actually almost worse than starting out with paper, because having held a $5 bill up to the light before this argument, the thing that your eye catches first is the fact that there's the same face on the watermark and the middle of the bill. I think catching a difference would be more of a thing to alert you than just the absence of something.
Correct. And I thought it was interesting that when Judge Gilbert held up the bill, he says, I see Abe. And clearly Abe is not who is on the $100 bill. I believe that's Benjamin Franklin on that bill. And so it was, if you do the standard four checks, which were talked about in the lower court argument, it couldn't pass the colored ink test, it couldn't pass the security strip test, it couldn't pass the watermark test. I also think that the decision in Inclema in the 11th Circuit had some language that kind of gets to the point of this, and they say, in that particular decision, you started with a Federal Reserve note and you ended with a Federal Reserve note. And I do think that is the situation here. I would
add
that.
But isn't it absurd? I mean, the government has a good point, doesn't it, that if you started out with, a high grade of paper from Office Max, you get a more stringent sentence, and if you are out there doing fraudulent things with U.S. currency?
I think this is one of those oddities in the guidelines. Judge Gilbert actually happened to be one of the judges who worked on the committee. I think he says that in his transcript when they revised the fraud guidelines and moved them around, and he indicated this is just something that had not been considered. So it is something that Mr. Simpkins says is going to be coming more to the fore. He had pointed out that they're seeing more and more of this. I'm sure it will be addressed. But the legislature, the Sentencing Commission, that is, I think, where this will have to be addressed to straighten out that particular issue, because I don't think there is any other interpretation for made in its entirety or altering a genuine instrument. And I do think that the appropriate guideline to be applied in this situation is 2B1.1.
You said you were going to address the instrument point?
The instrument point, yes, and we did not particularly or specifically address this. I agree wholeheartedly with Mr. Simpkins. That's not the point, the front on which we came to this. But my thought was, in which he clarified, that if you were to take this to a bank or to the Federal Reserve and you can establish, you know, it's got the $5 security strip, or I'm going to guess in the case of a $1 bill, it doesn't have anything, you're going to get a $1 bill in return for it. But otherwise, it's going to have that security strip, and that's what they'll trade that in for. Now, obviously, in Mr. Schreckengott's case, if he goes in and explains what he does, he's also going to get arrested for counterfeiting, but he would get a $5 replacement.
No, I don't think so.
Well, if he takes in the blank paper before he reprints,
yeah,
before
he leases the paper, changes his mind, decides to go straight, and takes it to the bank, and says candidly, I was thinking about putting some counterfeits on these, but I've decided to become an honest man. Would you please give me real fives? And if their answer is yes, it does sound like they're still treating them as instruments, and he's not going to go to jail.
Correct. I think, right, if he has cut off the offense conduct.
Well, maybe one could charge him with
attempted.
Right.
You know,
maybe he wouldn't be that candid when he thinks better of it.
Yeah.
The argument under 2B5.1, should the court go that way, there is still the argument out there that the enhancements would not apply. And I think that is well taken, given the odds that we discussed previously, the number of people who actually caught that these were counterfeit bills. I don't think that under Application Note 4 that you can get the enhancement to 2B5.1. And, of course, we also sought for and requested permission to reach a Booker issue. I will say, Your Honor, that I think decided on the merits, you don't even have to reach the Booker issue in this case. And unless you want me to specifically address that or the enhancement further.
A little hard to see how we could, since you didn't file a cross appeal.
That's correct. We
can't send the sentence down in the lack of a cross appeal, although we could certainly affirm it as it is.
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor. If you have further questions regarding any of these issues for me, thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much. Case taken under advisement. Our next